Sure is good to watch your adult children serving God. Alrighty. We're going to look at three different text verses this morning as we begin this today. We're going to start in the book of Genesis, look at two verses of the book of Genesis, and then Matthew chapter 19. Let's start in Genesis chapter 1. Genesis chapter 1. Genesis 1:27. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. Genesis chapter 5. Verse 2. Male and female created he them, and blessed them, and called their name Adam in the day they were created. Matthew chapter 19. Matthew chapter 19, verse 4, Jesus Christ is speaking. And he answered and said unto them, Have ye not read that he which made them at the beginning made them male and female? Let's go ahead and pray. Father in heaven, Lord, I love you. Lord, I thank you for your word. I ask your blessing now upon this time. Lord, please fill me with your spirit. Please, Father, control what I say, how I say it, Lord. I pray your spirit will reveal the truth that is being presented right now. Please, Father, I beg you, I need your help in this. So I pray that you truly would bless, Lord, strengthen those, Lord, who need the strengthening in this, Lord, and I pray that you would, those who have never seen this or hasn't been revealed to them, I pray tonight, Lord, that your spirit would illuminate this truth and what is going on in our culture today, Lord, please bless and work. Father, I love you. I pray and ask all this in Jesus' name. Amen. All right. There's been, of course, three different messages leading up to this. As the title of this message tonight is Dress According to Your Gender. Dress to your gender, all right? And we are going to get into the importance of that. We are going to deal with the issue of why a lady, a woman, should be in skirts and dresses versus trousers and not trousers. We're going to be covering that tonight. And I believe I'm hoping the way that I can make the case for this tonight, we are coming to a point in time for the first time in our culture in the last, since this really began 50, 60 years ago, and we're going to be looking at tonight, when we can actually see now, I think we're going to have people going back to this understanding in the Bible of the importance of this, where we've lost it. But as we can see what's happening to our culture, I believe we're going to see a lot of Christians going back to it right now. Okay? And in the first message, we dealt with the importance of knowing that your dress communicates a message. All right? It communicates a message by what you wear. You are trying to communicate something by the way you dress. There's no exceptions to that. And we learned that when it came to women, they had a greater responsibility than even the man. Remember, we looked there in 1 Timothy chapter 2 where the Apostle Paul was talking about, and the point of the whole chapter is, what is it there in verse 5, where God would have all men to be saved. And after that, that's when he said, and God had appointed me, an apostle, a preacher, of the gospel to that end, because he would have all men to be saved. And then it follows up with, in like manner, what's going to help all men to be saved, the point of the truth is women, you know, somebody quote the verse, I can't do it, dressing modestly, professing godliness. You communicate godliness by the way that you dress, ladies. I cannot do that. A man does not have that ability to communicate that message by the way that he dresses, and a woman does. Again, I can walk into Costco wearing this and nobody's going to say, look, there's a Christian man. Yesterday, as we were going through, I took Levi to Fred Meyer yesterday in the afternoon, and we're walking through the store, and it was one or two people. Levi had said, look, there's a Christian. Do you think he pointed to a man or a woman? Always a woman.
because they have the ability to profess godliness by the way that they dress. All right? And then secondly, what we looked at was also an important issue is, all right, what has to be covered? All right? Because we live in a day, we don't know what needs to be covered, both male and female here. And the biblical standard was clear as anything that was from at least from your neck through your knee needed to be covered. If the thighs were exposed, you got into biblical nakedness at that time. Again, our problem was that we looked at, our view of nakedness has been based upon Hollywood instead of the Bible. All right? But biblically, somebody was considered naked if anything from basically from the neck to the knee was exposed. All right? And then third message dealt with modesty. We looked at different aspects of modesty. One, it's not that our dress or appearance, we should not be striving to make some great fashion statement by our appearance. Modesty needs to be in place. And of course, what we really focused on was the importance of your dress, ladies, not drawing the attention of men. And we looked at a study from Princeton University on what it does to a man when a lady is immodestly dressed. How it literally shuts down a portion of his brain that recognizes you as a person. And the part of the brain that was operated in their study was the same one that works for tools, hammers, screwdrivers, things that a man uses. And now, we're going to get in this last sermon tonight. This will be the one, I don't think there's too much in the first three sermons that anybody would disagree with. I don't. That's not true with tonight's message. All right? Even within our independent, fundamental Baptist churches, there has been a great change in the last 15 to 20 years among this. All right? And we're going to look why. I'm going to try and lay out what has been going on. Okay? And my hope is, when we're looking at our culture, that people are going to open their eyes and say, wait a minute, we might have something wrong here. All right? Again, as I mentioned in the first message, I pray you'll let the Bible be your guide. All right? Don't come into this again with you know, your presuppositions and you already have your mind made up. Be like those that were at Berea. Search the Scriptures to see whether those things are so. All right? And I want to accomplish several things by this message. One, I want to strengthen those that are already holding to the position. I want to strengthen that. I was talking with a man, he actually used to go here, we had met, and he had asked about the series that I was doing on dress right now, and he'd asked if I was going to get to this issue, and him and his family, they hold to this standard, but he even said, he goes, man, with all the changing, you know, he said to me, do I have this wrong? He goes, everywhere I look, I said, brother, you don't have it wrong, you don't have it wrong. But again, a lot has changed in the last 10 to 15 years. I also want to give truth, you know, I also want to give this truth out. Remember, I mentioned this before. I remember the very first time I heard the sermon, I was at a huge pastor's conference, and I was 16 or 17 at the time, and I remember the pastor getting up there and preaching that you should not kiss a woman to the day you marry her. And I was, what? That's insane. Why would you not do that? Literally, like I said, I've been kissing girls since I've been, you know, 6 years old. I couldn't believe what I heard. I'm like, that's absurd. Who believes that? Nobody does that. And then again, but then the guy had Bible for it. I'm like, man, look at that. A woman shouldn't touch a man. Or man shouldn't touch a woman. Reverse that. I remember the first time, this would have been years prior to that. This is shortly after I got saved, and I just contacted Pastor John Norris recently about this message he preached. It's the only message I can remember him preaching after I got saved. It was when Michael Jackson's Thriller album came out. Remember, my dad was a rock and roll DJ. I loved rock music. It had never occurred to me there was anything wrong with it. And he got up and he preached against rock music. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. It was shocking to me because I'd simply never heard it before. But of course, that sermon was the seed that was planted. I did not end rock music that day. It was about, I was, what, 13 when he preached at 12, 13. But when I was 16, it did go by the wayside. And pastor had actually left. We went without a pastor for the next several years. So, and I think this truth we're going to be dealing with tonight is one of those that most people have never heard. You know, we're coming up with churches today. They don't touch this. They don't go near it. Nobody's heard a biblical case for it. Well, that's what we're going to do tonight. All right? And keep in mind, I brought this up too. If we were to look at churches over the last 60 years, this is important. As I make one of my premises for this message, this is important. All right? When we look at the state of local churches in the last 60 years and the changes that have come about, are we drawing more towards worldliness or closer to godliness? I think without exception, not even considering this doctrine, all would agree the churches are getting more carnal and not more worldly. I mean, we have independent fundamental Baptist churches today where the pulpits are gone. We've got little stools out here. We're just going to sit down and give a story. We're going to talk. We got our drum set set up. We're becoming more and more like the world. We're falling for the lie. We have to become relevant to our culture to win the culture. No, what we need to do is preach the Word of God and the power of the Holy Spirit, and we will reach the culture. So, having said that, if you agree with me to that point, that in the last 60 years, the changes that we have seen have been spinning us towards worldliness, then you must examine what has changed in the last 60 years to make sure, wait, is this one of those things drawing us closer to God, or is this one of those things that are leading to more worldliness? And let me also say this. Remember this now. This is important. Ladies, just because you do wear dresses and skirts, that doesn't make you holy, all right? It is right to do. I'm going to make the case for it. But beware of exchanging one abomination for another, all right? You can exchange this abomination, yet don't forget a proud look is also an abomination. So please, please, you are not to, I have this. You do not. Clearly, I am the spiritual one. No, you would be the carnal one. All right? You understand that? You would be the carnal one. Do not exchange abominations. All right. Let's get into the first point here. First off, as we see in our text verses, God made them male and female. He did that for a reason. There are differences to each of the sexes. There are differences to each of the genders. They are to be distinct. They are to glorify God based on the gender, based on the sex that God has given them. Today we have a blurring of the lines. We have a satanic movement to make women masculine and men effeminate. A blurring of the lines. And we can see it taking place in our culture. Think of those growing up with my generation, like TV shows like Star Trek, The New Generation, that wanted to show men and women equal within their television show. It was planting seeds within our minds, and we didn't even realize it. Now let me see, who can I call up front here? Where's Levi at? Is he right down there? Levi and Rachel, why don't you come on up here? They're my children, so I can pick on them. Again, men and women are certainly not the same. You guys can just stand right down there for me. Yet our culture, again, they're trying to change that. You know, they're trying to take the men, they're trying to take your boys, and they want to make them more effeminate. All right, why don't you stand right there? I'm going to go on the side. Why don't you come up, stand right there, Rachel? So what's trying to happen in our culture today, and the repercussions of this are enormous, all right? Enormous for the family. They're trying to take our boys and bring them over to this side. They're trying to take our girls and bring them over to this side. They want these lines blurred as if there is no distinction between the sexes. All right? Because there's great consequences when that takes place. And by the way, if you just open your eyes and read a newspaper, you're going to see those consequences. And I'm going to demonstrate it through a few slides here in just a second. But you know what? You need to teach your boys to be men. Do you understand that? You need to instill that in them. That's what they are to be. We're going to see this in Scripture. He needs to glorify God as a man. I'm going to show you a verse in the New Testament where he can't glorify God any other way. It's not possible. She needs to glorify God as a lady. There's no other way she can glorify God. God created them male and female. They're to be different. All right, you guys can sit down. They are to be different. Again, women carry a softness about them. It was amazing growing up. I mean, we have 5 children, 2 boys and 3 girls. Just the differences in them. You know, to the Barbie dolls with the girls and then the trucks and the planes and the roughness with the boys. That's right. You feed that. You know, I look back as I was dwelling upon this message, I think of all the things I've seen come up in our culture that were trying to blur the gender lines. Bring your daughter to work day. Sounds innocent enough, doesn't it? You can only worship... Let me go that part in New Testament. Let's go to 1 Corinthians chapter 11. You can only worship and glorify God or glorify your head in the manner in which God created you. That is the premise of 1 Corinthians chapter 11. All right, let's read through here. Be ye followers of me, even as I am... Even as I am also of Christ. Now I praise you, brethren, that you remember me in all things and keep the ordinances as I deliver them to you. But I would have you know that the head of every man is Christ, and the head of the woman is the man, and the head of Christ is God. So again, there's an order here that God gives. Now, he's not dealing with equality here. All right, understand that. In other words, who is the head of Christ in those verses? God. He was the head of Christ, yet they're equal. Do you understand that? Yet they're equal. Just like he's dealing with positions here, and then he gets to the man, to the woman. The head of the man is Christ, and then the head of the woman is the man. All right. Again, he's laying down a premise for the family, for us, and how we worship God. It's not that the female is not equal to the man. That's not what God is dealing with there. But there are God-given positions, and he does it for a reason. And that's what Satan's trying to take away right now. And it's leading to the destruction of families. Let me read on here. Every man praying or prophesying having his head covered dishonoreth his head. But every woman that prayeth or prophesies with her head uncovered dishonoreth her head, for that is even all one as if she were shaven. For if the woman be not covered, let her also be shorn. But if she be, but it be a shame for a woman to be shorn or shaven, let her be covered. For a man indeed ought not to cover his head, for as much as he is the image and glory of God. But the woman is the glory of the man. Notice the premise. I'm going to keep on reading here. It is drawing a distinction based upon appearance between male and female and how you come before God to worship him or glorify him. Where was I? Did I read verse 7 yet or not yet? Verse 8. For the man is not of the woman, but the woman of the man. Neither was the man created for the woman, but the woman for the man. For this calls out the woman to have power on her head because of the angels. Nevertheless, neither is the man without the woman, neither the woman without the man in the Lord. For as the woman is of the man, even so is the man also by the woman, but all things of God. Judge in yourself, is it comely that a woman pray unto God uncovered? Does not even nature itself teach you that? If a man have long hair, it is a shame unto him. But if a woman have long hair, it is a glory to her, for her hair is given her for a covering. Now, the reason why I'm going to these verses is because what God is identifying here, that as we want to glorify God, and as we want to worship him, and as we want to serve him, we must do it according to the gender and in that line that God gave us. That'll be important when we get to Deuteronomy 22:5 here in just a minute. I can only glorify God in the way and in the position that he created me. Again, we are seeing today the blurring of these lines between male and female. The lines are so blurred nowadays that we are putting females in combat roles and we think it's a good thing, the blurring of the lines. Let's take an example of what's happening in our culture today. Let's go to those slides. Who's up there, Josiah? Male or female? That is a female. Yep, that is a female right there that they on purpose, since years before this even, dressed to look like a boy and praised in our culture for it. That person can never glorify God in that manner. Not possible. Let's go to the next slide. This is Time Magazine's what, Person of the Year. That is a man that has been uplifted by our culture, who has won award after award for being courageous instead of being warned against the perversion that it's going into. A former Olympian, I believe, of what, seven or eight gold medals in the 1976 Olympics. Amazing. And yet our culture thinks this is good. We're going to reward this. Listen, now listen to me. This just doesn't happen overnight. A progression begins. Let's go to the last one. Now, this one's very interesting. This guy right here, he is the son of a famous actor. And when I was reading quotes, I should have wrote them down, I did not. They were talking about how he was breaking all these new boundaries in fashion as a man. He is not a homosexual. You can see him with his girlfriend, but he's on his way to prom wearing a skirt. He wears dresses all the time. Not to cross dress, but, you know, again, there's a blurring of the lines. If they can wear dresses, why can't I? Is his mentality. And again, he's being praised. When you look up the articles on him, he is praised left and right. Nobody questions it. He's a trendsetter. Listen to me. They're right. This is coming. You're going to see this in Anchorage Public School System here 2 to 3 years. You're going to see it. All right? We're being fed it. Now, at first, you're shocked. Wow, he has on a skirt. It will become commonplace. It will no longer be shocking. All right? We're seeing the results of the blurring of the lines as to what's taking place right now in our culture. Now, point number two, your clothes must reflect your gender. Let's head over to Deuteronomy 22:5. There's a total, I should give this out, there's a total of 3 points. I've just finished the first point. The first point, what I was trying to emphasize, is God made them male and female. That there's to be a distinction there. Now what I want us to see is that distinction is also to be made in your dress, male and female. All right, Deuteronomy 22:5. The woman shall not wear that which pertaineth unto a man, neither shall a man put on a woman's garment. For all that do so are an abomination unto the Lord thy God. It is an abomination when a man dresses like a woman or a woman dresses like a man. When a woman puts on a man's garment or a man puts on a woman's garment. That is an abomination before God. It's not right. Lines are being blurred again. Things are being crossed. I want you to listen to this commentary about this verse. This commentary is written in 1871 at JFB. Was it Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown? 1871, here's their commentary in Deuteronomy 22:5. The insight they have, I think, is incredible. Here's what he said. Again, this is in a time when you never, ever, ever, ever saw a woman in trousers. All right? They were properly forbidden for the adoption of the habiliments, clothes, of the one sex by the other is an outrage on decency, obliterates the distinctions of nature by fostering softness and effeminacy in the man, impudence and boldness in the woman, as well as levity and hypocrisy in both. And in short, it opens the door to an influx of so many evils that all who wear the dress of another sex are pronounced an abomination unto the Lord. What we're going to see began taking place in America about 60 years ago was a door was being opened to great sin. Now, what I'm going to do right now, I'm going to give you three reasons why it is wrong for a woman to wear trousers and pants biblically. I give three reasons, okay? Number one, we see that right here in Deuteronomy 22:5. And by the way, my last point is going to be covering the arguments against this. That'll be the third point. The common arguments that are given today, but arguments that never existed 60 years ago, by the way. Anyhow, Deuteronomy 22:5, we have to figure out then, what is the female garment? What is the male garment? Well, the female garment, although that's changing in our culture, we already know what that is. All right? But the male, what is the male garment? All right? We're going to go to two verses right now, and we're going to look at what the male garment is. Exodus chapter 28, and then we're going to go to the book of Job. Exodus 28:42. What we're going to see here is that biblically and historically, within Judeo-Christian cultures, the man's garment was always one piece of garment, and that was trousers. All right. First off, Exodus 28:42, then we're going to jump over to the book of Job. And thou shalt make them linen breeches to cover their nakedness, from the loins even unto the thighs, they shall reach. All right, I'll talk more about this in just a second. Let's go ahead and head over to the book of Job. Now, what we have in Job is actually, there's similar, it said similar in several different books of the Bible, but I think it's important we go to the book of Job and see it, and I'll explain why once I get there. We'll just look at one verse here in Job. Job, I believe it's 38:3. Yes. Job 38:3. Gird up now thy loins like a man, for I will demand of thee, and answer thou me. All right? Now, the idea of gird up loins like a man isn't just found here, but we're going to read it out of the book of Job because I think it sets an important premise. All right? The book of Job is the oldest book in the Bible. It was written well before Genesis was actually written. Written around the time of Abraham. And what that's referring to is, remember when we talked about modesty, we're going to get to 1 Timothy 2:9 here in just a second. We talked about the word katastole, all right, which dealt with the word for apparel right there. Now, there's another version that just stole, without the kata to it, and that would apply to a robe. It also referred to a man, all right? For instance, it was stole, as I mentioned, when the father said to the prodigal son, you know, go get the robe and put it on him. That was the word stole. It was not katastole, it was stole. All right? And so a man had a robe that he would wear. He would not wear a katastole, he would wear a stole. And when gird up thy loins, what that would mean, what they would do is, for different things, they would pull that robe up and they would tie it off and cinch it into a belt. All right? But they would not be naked. Want to know why? They had on trousers. That's going back to the book of Job. They would have on trousers. If you remember, when we talked about the nakedness that was seen on the ladies when they were talking about going into captivity in the book of Isaiah, when they did that, when they were crossing the river, their nakedness was exposed because they would not have on the breeches. They would not be there. They wouldn't have those on. So the men would take that, they would pull those up, and for different reasons they would do it. Go into war. They would tie those things up, and they would go to war. They wouldn't have that garment, that robe, hindering them from fighting. Depending on what type of work they were doing, they would gird up their loins. If it was something serious they were getting ready to do, they would gird up their loins and tie it off. But again, they weren't naked because they had on the breeches, the trousers, at that point in time. So this is something that goes all the way back to the book of Job. All the way back to the book of Job, we had this. Not only that, we also see in the Bible. So Deuteronomy, what I'm trying to say is this, and I'm going to give out more for this in just a second, is that the man's garment has always been trousers. Throughout all of history, and I'm going to let a secular source tell you that, where it's not just a preacher, here in just a minute. Through Judeo-Christian culture, except for the last 60 years, that has always been a man's garment in Judeo-Christian cultures. Always. It's just recently changed. Now, here's the sex. So the first reason why is because it's a man's garment. All right? Because it's a man's garment, always has been a man's garment. It's just changed now. We're just so used to seeing it now, it's no longer shocking. All right? It's commonplace now. We're deadened to it. That line, the gender line has been blurred right there. All right? But there's a second biblical reason why. Not only that. And that is, let's go back to 1 Timothy chapter 2. First Timothy chapter 2 and verse 9. Here is the second biblical reason why. In like manner also that women adorn themselves in modest apparel with shamefacedness and sobriety, not with broided hair or gold or pearls or costly array, but which becometh women professing godliness with good works. And again, going back to the word apparel, the kata stole. Remember, it meant when you put the kata with it, when that combined right there, was a feminine approach. It meant, some places read simply the word, a dress, a long flowing, it was a garment that would not conform, all right? It wasn't possible. And that was meeting the definition of course, biblical modesty, as we saw 2 weeks ago on this. So the second reason why it's not right is because it's impossible for pants to meet that requirement. It's not possible. Men can see every curve you have. It's not possible. It's not flowing. But I don't wear tight jeans. That's like saying you swim in water that's not wet. If you want to wear loose jeans, what we call that is a jean skirt. It in no way meets the definition of 1 Timothy 2:9 of a long flowing garment. It doesn't meet the definition. Third reason why now. Now the third reason, I am going to tradition now. You say, oh, we're going to tradition, we're supposed to stay away from traditions of men. Well, hold up a second. Let's go to 2 Thessalonians chapter 3. We're going to go to history. I want you to see how tradition and history bear out what I am teaching tonight. 2 Thessalonians chapter 3 and verse 6. Now we command you, brethren, in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that you withdraw yourselves from every brother that walketh disorderly and not after the what? The tradition which you received of us. No doubt tradition of men can be used wrong, and it usually is. You won't get any argument with me on that. Usually is. But when traditions are in accordance with the Bible, there's nothing wrong with them. All right? And my point, as I'm going to this point, I want you to see historically that what I'm saying bears this out throughout all of history in the Judeo-Christian cultures. Except for the of 6,000 years of history here, with the exception of the last 60 years, this was not an issue.
Again, it's only been the last 56 years where pants was not considered solely a male garment within Jewish and Christian cultures. Also, keep in mind, it's during this time that our culture, this is very important, all right? I brought it out in a few different messages, usually as a sub-point, although I am planning probably on a series to develop this more. When you get around 1920, that is when we really begin to see changes in theology, in seminaries. And I'm not dealing with dress standards here. I'm dealing with how we approached God. It began to change. For the first time in seminaries, we had schools all of a sudden questioning God, doubting miracles, doubting the virgin birth, doubting the resurrection. There was a change taking place. Well, what was happening? Well, when you look at, usually, you can see it coming, even going back to the 19th century. You could see change was coming, all right? And it just got to the church, to the theological side. Around 1910 to 1920 did the changes begin to affect it there. But things are gradual. We are becoming what we refer to as post-Christian or post-modern. It was getting to a point in time now when Western culture, or let's just say American culture for right now, but it would apply to Europe as well, when we are no longer allowing biblical principles to define us. We were simply trying to go apart from God. Secularism and humanism was on the rise. So we were trying to find truth in how we identified as a culture based on a humanistic point of view instead of a God-centered point of view. It had massive ramifications that we're reaping right now. One of the first ways it began to manifest itself, though, was in dress. Okay? It was in dress. Let me give you this. This is out of the 1828 Webster's Dictionary for the word breeches. Interesting. You would not find this definition today. A garment worn by men, covering the hips and thighs. It is now a close garment, now called trousers. To wear the breeches is in the wife to usurp the authority of the husband. That was in Webster's Dictionary. Just showing you, there was a time when it would have been shocking to see a woman in trousers. So, and we're going to cover, was it just culture? No. Why was it just the Christian and Judeo cultures? Because it wasn't true in Asia, as we're going to see. We never even had a First Lady of the United States wear trousers in office until the 1970s. Pat Nixon was the very first First Lady to ever wear trousers. That's in most of our lifetime when that took place. I could go over and over. I was looking up different things of when the first public school teachers were now allowed to wear. It was all around the same time frame, into the 70s. One of the very first women of notoriety that began to do it was an actress, of course, I'm sure many of us are familiar with, named Katharine Hepburn. She was known for her extreme feminist ways. She was raised by very progressive liberal parents. Even when she was a teenager or younger, they would take her around to different progressive movements. From suffrage to many different things. She was known, let me read this here. She was known for her rebellious attitude. One of her famous quotes was, if you don't break the rules, you'll never have any fun. She was known when she'd go in between, you know, shooting a movie scene, when she'd come out, reporters would be waiting there, she would purposely show up in trousers. And as I was reading through this, this isn't from, I'm not at a Christian website here when I'm reading this. I'm reading this from a neutral, and they would talk how shocked they would be. What are you doing? And she was purposely wanting to push the envelope at this. All right. It was one that, she wasn't certainly the very first. The earliest I could ever find any of it was actually some lady coal workers in the late 19th century. But even though they did, they all wore a skirt over top of the trousers that they were doing. So now what you have for the first time is America starting to get acquainted with, again, the timing of this is important. This is we're in the 1920s and 1930s here with Katharine Hepburn. Lines have been crossed. The ability for this to take place is now in place. It was through a movement by, you can see where the Satan was working in the 19th century coming up to this time. So now the devil just had to get people over the shock of it.
Because now we are trying to base truth not solely on Scripture, but starting with ourselves. And so it was introduced this way through Hollywood first. Now here's a history from a fashion group on women wearing pants. A neutral place. This isn't me talking. All right? I think the title of the article, I'm not sure, Trousers for Women, I can't remember, I think that was it. Throughout much of Western history, women's clothing has been very different from men's clothing, and society has made strict rules requiring individuals to dress according to their gender. Amen. For the most part, these rules have defined trousers as men's clothing. For centuries, society's disapproval prevented most women from wearing pants, though in some Eastern cultures, paganistic cultures, this is not Judeo-Christian, such as those in China or Malaysia, both women and men have long dressed in trousers. Most European cultures have only very recently permitted women to wear them. The trend began during the early 1900s, became more widespread during the 1920s and 1930s, and continued to grow until by the late 1990s, a majority of women regularly wore pants, not only for casual wear, but also for work. It was Eastern culture that inspired a French designer who's now dead, going back to the 1920s, to introduce this. Again, we're dealing now with different things such as outright idolatry. In other words, the worldview that they were pulling us from is very important. It was Eastern culture that inspired French designer Paul Poirier to become one of the first to design pants for women. In 1913, he created a loose-fitting, wide-legged trouser for women called harem pants, which were based on the costumes from a popular opera, and which it would actually lead to a popular, I don't know if there was a play or opera movie called 1001 Arabian Nights. Trousers have always been the preferred dress of women who had to do physical work, speaking in the 20th century. The arrival of World War I, and this would be primarily Europe here he's addressing, America is going to come to play in World War II, gave many women jobs as men went to join the military. Though women who worked with the public still wore skirts, many women wore trousers and overalls to work in factories. After the war ended, women were reluctant to give up the freedom of movement their pants had given them. Another French designer, Chanel, loved wearing pants herself, often dressing in her boyfriend's suits, and she began designing pants for women to wear while doing sports and other activities. Again, notice the people that are introducing this, their worldview. We're not dealing with anybody here we're mentioning who has a biblical-centered worldview. They're trying to find truth. In other words, they're working from a premise that it doesn't matter. That premise is wrong. Where am I at here? During the 1930s, pants continued to be stylish, although they were still shocking to many. Audiences were both fascinated and horrified by glamorous actresses of the time, such as Katharine Hepburn, who wore trousers regularly. Though some designers created tailor slack suits for women, wearing pants was still not widely accepted. This would be the 1930s. Some conservatives considered women in pants unnatural and masculine. However, by 1939, Vogue, the respected fashion magazine, pictured women in trousers for the first time, and many women, that led to many women wearing it for different casual events, such as sports and whatnot. The 1940s placed more women in wartime jobs as World War II began, and trousers once again, you know, it sort of tailored off, once again got a boost in popularity. Although the very feminine look of post-war 1950s discouraged many women from wearing pants, by the 1960s and 1970s, extremely casual clothes were the fashion. By the late 1960s, pants on women became completely accepted, first for their casual wear and finally for the workplace. Fashion leaders such as Saint Laurent designed dressy pantsuits by the late 1990s, two-thirds of women in the United States wore pants to work several times a week. So it took until the late 1960s to an overall acceptance would take place within the culture. And then it was still another 30 years before it was common in all facets of of women wearing in all different, whether it was going to work or casual or whatever it was by that time. Now we have to keep in mind is what was our culture doing during this time? What did the 1960s bring us? You know, I didn't bring it, but when you look at different statistics from crime to, you know, drugs, you name it, from the 1960s on, it's horrifying what began to take place. Again, gender lines were certainly being blurred at this time. Again, it was during this same time frame that the culture as a whole was turning away from God, not toward God. That's important to remember. They're trying to gain independence from God during this time. They want to do what they want to do. They don't want to be a Christian culture, and of course it was becoming post-Christian, such as where we're at right now. Again, we have to ask ourselves, what was the spirit or the thinking that led to this change? Was Katharine Hepburn saying, man, I'm going to wear these trousers because you know what? We need to draw closer to the Lord. That's absurd to think that. Take the motive into consideration. I believe that, going back to that, the trousers on women was attacking the very premise that the man is even head of the home. It was during this time the family structure was changing in the United States. Where, to the point now, you'll rarely, in a secular sense, not within Christian, not within our circles, you'll rarely have a woman who would ever say, in her vow to her husband, I will submit myself to my husband. That is removed. It is no coincidence that is during the same time frame with all the other changes we've seen take place in our culture, including with dress. It was a culture that was turning towards humanism, not towards God. It was becoming post-Christian. That is the influence, the direct influence by anybody you read that led to that change. When we were in New Guinea, my mom sent us a DVD, a television show called Dick Van Dyke. It aired from the late 50s, I think, till 1966. And I'm going to give some quotes from that show. It was a very popular show, for the most part clean. Even when you go into the husband and wife's bedroom, they show separate beds, such as was common during that time. And we were watching it, and we had the choice on the first season, you can watch producer or director comments. So we decided to do that with all the episodes. I think we did it with two. But the Lord was definitely in it in the two that we picked. The producer of the show was very popular. I can't think of his name. He's very popular. I mean, even still to this day. Of course, he's, you know, I think in his 90s right now. And he talked about how he said they were the very first show, but I've since found out in my research they were just one of the first shows. But when you watch the video of him saying this, he says they were the first show. They were probably the very first show that was of popularity that did this. But they were the first show to show a woman in trousers on your television set. In their first season, they did that. And he talks of all the problems they ran into. Their sponsors pulled out. Letters flooded them. How dare you show that? And what he says is, we wanted to change the culture. He said, so what we did was, they were ready for this. They knew it was coming. As you listen, he wanted it to become commonplace as you sat in your living room that you saw there was nothing wrong with this. And he said, so we came up with a compromise with our sponsors. We said, we'll just show her in one scene each episode, and then we'll put her back in a dress or a skirt. And the sponsors agreed. I think it was about the third season, they just ignored that altogether. The culture was changing so rapidly at that time, they no longer had to abide by that standard. And it was no longer a fuss. Here's a quote from another one of their producers. This isn't the same one. He said, let me get this right. What she did was, I'm quoting from him, what she did was set a style trend. Partially as a result, women started wearing pants. Again, what happened was this. the devil's smart. When we first see things, sometimes we're just shocked when we see things because we're not accustomed to it. Again, if somebody was to walk in here and a man was to walk in here completely dressed, you know, like a female, we would be stunned. Well, please keep in mind, that's exactly how it was going back 60 years ago when a woman wore trousers. People were stunned. What were they saying? She's wearing a man's garment, which supports the Bible. Breeches were a man's garment. Women wore a catastole, a flowing garment, so it wouldn't curve through their body. Girt up by loins like a man. Didn't show your nakedness because the breeches were there. The breeches. The trousers, as it's commonly called today. And so family sat in their living room set, and they would turn on shows like the Dick Van Dyke Show, the I Love Lucy Show, and one or two scenes an episode, the woman would be in trousers. At first they were like, what? And they're writing letters. Get this off my TV. All right, we'll compromise. And remember, they had a purpose behind it. It wasn't about entertainment. Don't ever think that. It was about changing a culture. And so now the American families are sitting there, and it starts to become commonplace. You see it over and over and over. Now here's where it gets dangerous for us. Because in the last 20 years within IFB circles, for the most part, when you went to church before 15, 20 years ago, you rarely saw a woman in trousers. Now it's commonplace for us. It's just taken an additional 30 or 40 years. But please ask yourself, what started it? Throughout human history, pants and trousers were a man's garment. Within Christian cultures. It's only in our lifetime that has changed. And as you see it more and more and more, you know, after a while, there's no doubt, even in the ministry, there's times, isn't it true, Pastor Rush, you're just like, almost you don't want to fight this. You know, that spirit is so strong because it's prevalent. Yeah, I don't know how many times, my pastor's wife wears it. And they don't realize the example that they're setting. How that is going to use to justify this. Because people do look to leadership for guiding in this. Now, third point now. I know I'm running late, just bear with me here. What I want to cover is the arguments today against this teaching. All right? Because we can bring pastors up here and they'll come up with very eloquent arguments to try and shoot down what I've just taught you. So I'm going to address their arguments right now. First of all, a very common one is Deuteronomy 22:5 does not apply today. Hogwash. It certainly does. They like to pull from that chapter where it talks about mixing different fabrics, about having up on your house a fence going around. What's the other one that's there? There's several reasons why that is nonsense. All right. First off, we're not dealing with a moral abomination. With those other things in that chapter. We are not. This is an abomination. And I'm going to get more clear on that anyhow. But those same premises, even in those other things, are still borne out in cultures throughout the world today. For instance, the up on your roof that you're required, you need to put a little fence around up on your roof. Why? Because that's where they fellowship. When they went out there, when they built the houses in Bible times, they wouldn't go underneath the house or inside the house. They would go on top of the house. And so the Lord's saying, no, we don't need people falling off. Put a fence around it. You know, go ahead and make a fellowship area, a sit-down, a couch on top of your roof. I bet you the city of Anchorage comes and tells you, put a fence around that. Common sense teaches it. We're not dealing with a morality issue here. And then you got the mixing of the fabrics, as if that's the whole thing. No, we got you there. No, you don't. You don't have anything there. All right? First off, when you go back to even different certain of the priest's garments, there was a mixing that would even be allowed at that time. One, it would identify them as a priest, and those other people were not allowed to be identified as a priest. That was them. Go ahead and wear a police officer's uniform and start walking around Anchorage and let's see what happens to you. All right? And besides that, we're dealing with a morality issue, something that is an abomination. All right? Let me give you this. And by the way, I've heard this argument too brought up several times. Because the concept is not repeated in the New Testament, it does not apply. Neither is bestiality repeated in the New Testament. And I submit to you, the concept is repeated in the New Testament in 1 Corinthians chapter 11. The idea of men glorifying God as men based on appearance and women glorifying God based upon women, as women based on their appearance. Here is a list of the abominations. Here's all of them. Now, understand this. If you go to look it up, there's two different words used for abomination. One deals with the moral outrage, which is the same word that is used in Deuteronomy 22:5. Here's everywhere it's used. I'm going to list you all the abominations. Sodomy, idolatry, unjust weights and measures, pride, uncleanness, incest, adultery, offering your seed to Molech, sacrificing your children, sorcery, hiring a whore, a forwardness, perverseness, sacrifice of the wicked, lying lips, thoughts of the wicked, and he that justifies the wicked. Guess which one's the only one our independent fundamental Baptist preachers like to say doesn't apply. And then, well, I'll be nice. I'm going to be nice. But if you just look when they get home, what is being warned, you understand why they don't want to say it applies today. So again, Deuteronomy 22:5 is dealing with morality. Think of that commentary in 1871. I love the insight. It would open a door to so much other sins. A door was opened 60 years ago. If that door never opened, we're not where we are right now. We don't have a man being honored as woman of the year. We would still be appalled by it. Another common argument, breeches were just underwear. This is absurd. This is absolutely absurd. It is given as a garment. It was an undergarment. But it is, how would I say this, less than ethical. It is not just to the Scriptures. There's a lot of adjectives I like to use right now to try and tell me that when you talk about undergarments referred to in the Bible time, it is the same way that we use them now. They are not. It is different. You know, when I go off to war, I'm not going out in my BVDs. Let's go to war. That's absurd. You know the meaning of it. It was a given for a garment to be worn and to be seen by others. Our undergarments of today are not. If I get up here again in just my Fruit of the Looms, we have problems. Again, I find this argument to be dishonest and a twisting of the Scripture with knowledge of it, with those who I've talked with about. And then the third argument, last argument here, and I'll be done, is it's just culture. That there was a time when it would be wrong, when it was wrong within the culture. But as the culture changed and it was accepted that this is feminine, we're fine. Oh, no. I was in St. Pete's outside missionary's home, and another missionary, good guy, I like him, he's a missionary in Spain, independent fundamental Baptist missionary. And we were talking about 50 yards away from the house we were staying in and fellowshipping in, and he is facing towards my house, and my wife and daughters were outside. And he used to pastor a church actually in Japan, an IFB church in Japan as a missionary, and this time he was in Spain. And he kept on looking at my wife and daughters, and he said, with arrogancy, your wife and daughters still wear dresses and skirts? And I said, yes, they do. And he goes, we used to be like that. And he goes, I am so glad I was set free from that. Now that, oh, here we go. What a joke. And then he went into his argument. It was going to be the culture argument. It was the one he went for. And he was going to educate me on this. And he said, and they were wearing about the same size, skirts that they have on right now. He goes, you know that in the early 1800s, if they wore that, it would be considered sin. Talking about the Victorian age period, which those dresses absolutely did cover your ankles. They were down there. And it's simply culture. As it's accepted in the culture, we're fine. That's wrong. Okay? One, he is right on the premise that if my daughters were wearing that in the early 1800s, it would be sin. Absolutely would be. Not because they broke the definition of biblical nudity, it's because they offended the culture that they were in. Do you understand that? Not because they broke biblical nudity. The Bible's clear on what that is. That is neck to the knees. But because they went against the standard of the culture of the day and not going against, we're not talking going in the opposite way from God. We're talking something really towards God. They had a higher degree of modesty at that time. And it wouldn't have been proper for them to wear that. All right? But our arguments for the issue is simply not based when culture begins to go against the Word of God, we have problems. This isn't accepted now simply because our culture accepted it. Again, let's keep in mind, he is trying to argue with me in this post-Christian, this culture that's running as far away from God as fast as they can. Well, our culture now accepts it. It's all right. Are you absurd? Would you please open your eyes to see what's happening to our families and what's taking place? Our culture's not going towards the Lord. It's running away from it. Look what's happening in our churches. The humanism that comes in, the secularism that comes in, it's entertainment-based. It's no longer God-centered. It's man-centered. Pride is throughout. The culture issue doesn't work is because it's dealing with a biblical premise that does not change 1 Timothy 2:9, nor does it change Deuteronomy 22:5, and the garment that is a man's garment. I even asked them, all right, tell me, what's the man's garment? Go on. What is it? Because a woman can't wear a man's garment. Is that right? Yes. What is it? Give me the man's garment. What is it? And he would, I don't remember what he said. He would talk and he would pause. And I would say it again. Just tell me what the man's garment is. What is it? What's the garment that's a man's garment that my wife can't wear? Please tell me. If it's not trousers, it doesn't exist. Again, trousers is not the issue right now of offending a culture. We're talking about something that's breaking the Bible at this point in time. All right. I hope this helps. I hope you see the biblical truth of it. Again, I love everyone. You understand that? I'm not against you in this as our church. This isn't coming out, and I have a biblical responsibility to show it. And now what I've done is I put the ball in your court. All right? I put the ball in your court. I'm not going to be held accountable before the Lord because I did not present this truth. And make no mistake about it, it is a truth. Keep in mind, for the last, except for this last small time period in history, this was not even an issue in Christian cultures. It wasn't even an issue. All right, with every head bowed and every eye closed.